What is the perfect story? Does it exist? Is there a tangible formula? Has the perfect story ever been told? And if so, are we simply trying to retell this story over and over? This podcast is called The Midnight Myth, and somewhere between the black of night and the break of dawn, there is a story, and it's perfect. My name is Derek Jones.
And my name is Laurel Hostack.
Welcome to The Midnight Myth. Welcome back to The Midnight Myth, everybody's favorite history, mythology, philosophy, and how those subjects bubble up into our popular storytelling podcast. As always, I am very excited to be back delivering more sweet and spicy Midnight Myth content for all of you Midnight Myth listeners. And we're doing a very special episode today. This is a Midnight Myth meditation. These are things that we do when Laurel and I feel like we have something to say, but it might fall short of a full episode. There's just things that we want to get off our chest. And this is an episode about one of my all-time favorite shows, and we will discuss what that means going forward, that just concluded season 3. It streams on Apple TV+. I know you've heard of it because everyone's heard of it. It is the critically and commercially smash hit phenomenon, Ted Lasso. Season 3 just ended. Spoiler warning is up. We will spoil season 3 of Ted Lasso if you haven't seen it. And I love this show so much that when season 3 was over, I looked to Laurel and I said, I'd like for us to just get some thoughts down and do a Midnight Myth meditation about what this show means to me, learn what it means to you, Laurel, and talk about it because it may be over. It hasn't confirmed that that was the series finale. However, it has been suggested that there might be a spinoff, the universe might continue, but that this was some sort of an end, potentially the end of the character Ted Lasso in the Ted Lasso universe. And I wanted to just take a minute and reflect what the show is about, how it became popular, and what it means for popular culture in a potentially post Ted Lasso world. How's that sound to you?
That sounds awesome to me. I'm really glad that we're here and glad that we're talking about this show.
Great. Well, before we roll up our sleeves and get too deep into it, Laurel, do your thing.
Hey, we would just love to hear from you. Check us out on social media. We're on Twitter at The Midnight Myth, and we are on Facebook, and we're on Instagram at Midnight Myth Podcast. We're also on the World Wide Web at midnightmyth.com. You can always drop us a line on the contact form there. We love to hear from you. Also, if you love what you're hearing, please leave us a rating and or a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is that you listen, because that really helps us stay in the conversation, if you will. And meanwhile, we have other projects in the works. So that includes Derek and Steve working on The Wheel of Ka. They will soon be recording the inaugural episode on The Talisman by Stephen King and Peter Straub, and they are really enjoying that book from what I can tell, and I'm really excited to hear what they have to say about it. Meanwhile, I am taking a quick season break from Sleep and Sorcery, but we are going to be due back for new episodes in June. So June 20th is my target date for new episodes of Sleep and Sorcery, which is my fantasy and folklore-inspired sleep podcast. Also, hey, I got a book deal. So Sleep and Sorcery is going to be a book hitting shelves next spring 2024. So if you're not on the Midnight Myth email list yet, definitely check out the description, get on the Midnight Myth email list, and then you will be among the first to get special updates like events that I'll be signing books at or launches or release dates or the cover reveal. So definitely get on our email list if you like.
Awesome. On with the show. I'm not going to do a recap of three seasons of TV. So again, spoiler wall, but I will just say a few things in recap about what Ted Lasso seasons 1 through 3 have been about. And they've been about a character named Ted Lasso, who's an American football coach who gets hired to coach in the English Premier League of soccer by a woman named Rebecca, who takes control of a football team after a tumultuous divorce with her now ex-husband, Rupert. She hires Ted with the idea that he would tank the team because ruining the team would make Rupert's life living hell. And it's this complicated comedy revenge plot. However, Ted Lasso's power of positivity, his ability to meet people where they're at, his love of talking and coaching, and his love of being around near and lifting up people is so infectious that he and Rebecca end up becoming the firmest of friends. They end up coaching the team successfully. By the end of season 3, they are second place. They almost win the title. And along the way, we meet a whole host of very colorful characters who all become better because they have Ted in their life, from his second-in-command Coach Beard to Roy Kent, Jamie Hart, Keeley Higgins, just to name a few of the amazing, colorful characters. And we go through life with them, centered around this football team, AFC Richmond, and how Ted's positivity has transformed them all. It's not all fun and games with Ted, as he deals with panic anxiety disorder. He himself had gone through a nasty divorce, and it ends with him realizing, as much as he loves AFC Richmond, and as much as he loves being a soccer/European football coach, he decides that the thing that matters most to him is returning home and being a dad. And he ends up turning down a small fortune in order that Rebecca's willing to pay him to stay in order to go back home and be with his son.
And coach his football, his soccer team. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's more important to him than all the money in the world. I love and adore this show. It's one of my favorites. I think at the end of this episode, I'd like us to rank favorite shows where we see Ted Lasso in there. But I wanted to ask you a few questions, Laurel, if that's okay.
Absolutely. I would love that.
This first question is a big one, and it's going to be one that needs a little preamble. During the late 90s, early to mid 2000s, television had a bit of a renaissance, and it was focused on what people called, quote, the age of the antihero, end quote. These are characters like Tony Soprano, Walter White, Omar from The Wire. These are shows that are built largely around men, mostly white men, who are not morally good people. They might be sociopathic, they might be psychopathic. They're willing to lie, cheat, steal, and kill. And all of these critically and commercial TV series were based around these really terrible men who would not be the typical protagonist. And so the coin was the era of the antihero. Even shows like Walking Dead had Rick Grimes, who was a little more of a conventional hero, but had no problem killing anyone that got in his way if he had to. And it was considered to be a golden age of television based upon the antihero as the main protagonist. With the critical and commercial success of Ted Lasso, is the age of the antihero over?
That's an amazing question, and I'm fairly certain I'm going to have to take a really long walk around the question. I'm going to dance quite a bit around it before I even decide how I want to come down as a yes or no with regard to Ted Lasso. But I do believe that the antihero has pretty much always been attractive to us and will continue to be attractive to us in the future. There is something that is very magnetic about the man with no name. There is something very magnetic about Tony Soprano, regardless of what time you are watching those characters in. We are drawn to darkness, and we are also drawn to characters that can lure us in with charm and wit and deep feeling that is true, that is authentic, and that is also a piece of a machine driving towards destruction. That's always, when done well, going to be fascinating. I think there has already, even before Ted Lasso, been a little bit of a backlash toward the continual output of anti-heroes on prestige television. And there's been a sea change brewing for a little while. I think people have gotten a little bit tired of Walter White's and Tony Soprano's and even, you know, Mad Men. Like, I think people are a little bit tired of trotting out the same kind of anti-hero. But that hunger is never going to go away, in my opinion. We still have, you know, Succession just ended. That is a whole show of anti-heroes, or possibly villains who you somewhat identify with at one time or another. And Rick and Morty is still going strong. I think there is always going to be a draw toward the anti-hero. However, I do think in the last few years, and particularly in the climate of COVID and the climate of post-COVID, there is a hunger and a thirst for more positivity on screen, and there's a hunger and a thirst for characters on screen to be genuinely good role models, particularly of masculinity. Femininity as well, but particularly of masculinity. So I think Ted Lasso came in at a point where it was able to speak to a desire to see healthy, strong, compassionate, loving, caring men, and then men who fall short of that and work toward that on screen in a really visible way. I think that was really highly desired. And then I think Ted Lasso in itself, the show and the character, had to go through its own pendulum swing with the kind of positivity that Ted embodies. The first season, it is so effusive. It is just so positive, and Ted is so positive. And the second season sort of reacted kind of negatively toward it. And it was a less happy-go-lucky season, but in a way that was able to bring in a kind of depth that was not entirely there in the first seasons. We were all really ready for season one and that positivity. And then by the end of it, we were like, I think Ted might be toxic. And then season two dredged up some toxicity and came to this beautiful conclusion, which was, yeah, there are some times when Ted's positivity is masking a deep insecurity, but also it is who he authentically is, and it's not a fault. So if we can all embrace the parts of it that are constructive, then we're going to be able to move forward a lot happier and a lot healthier. So big, long, circuitous way of me saying, I don't think the age of the antihero is over, but I think as antiheroes continue to be part of our consciousness, there is a growing thirst for healthy, strong, especially men, but healthy, strong characters who are trying to do the right thing and trying to be better.
I'm going to call it, the age of the antihero is over. The idea that all audiences want are complicated, self-centered antiheroes in dark, gritty realities. I think that era of that being what everybody wants, I think it's done. I think it's over. I think people you mentioned COVID. I think after being locked inside for years, not being able to interact with each other, we have yet to reconcile and heal from that wound. There are people who were sick and lost things. Some lost lives. Some lost family members. There's not a person on the planet that COVID didn't touch in some way, and it's all negative. And that incredibly negative event, I think, has created a psychic crater in our collective consciousness, if there is such a thing, which there may not be, but roll with me. Assume there's a collective consciousness, not an unconsciousness, but we collectively share some sort of consciousness together. There's this huge crater of COVID, and in that crater is a yearning for something nice. And I know that's so simple, but something that brings us joy, entertainment that is not watered down, and nor are the edges sanded off, but about good people trying to be good people. I think the era of the antihero has ended. I don't think that's what audiences want. If you look at the most popular shows right now, I think people want to see redemption. I think people want to feel a sense of redemption. I think people want to feel a sense of community and interconnectedness. And Ted Lasso was the perfect, I think, vehicle for that moment and that feeling during the times that we have been living in and enduring. And I think its legacy is going to loom large as the show that says, hey, guess what, everyone? We don't just need to tell stories about strong, silent, mean men hurting people. And do I think that means those stories are going to be completely over? No. You mentioned two that are going on right now that are successful and popular in Succession and Rick and Morty. Two shows which I adore. As I'm not saying every show should be Ted Lasso. No, what makes it unique is that in a universe of The Sopranos, the Game of Thrones, the Breaking Bads, the Mad Men, the Rick and Morty, the South Park, the Always Sunny in Philadelphia's, in these shows that just feature psychopaths as main characters, if not the main character, in comes Ted Lasso and everyone goes, oh yeah, I like that. There's also a reason the MCU is the most popular thing in the world.
Yeah, people want to have fun. They want to see heroes being heroic.
Yeah, we want those stories to be meaningful and to be impactful. We don't want them sanitized with the edges sanded off, but we want to see a real hero. I do think, especially in America, there is a crisis of masculinity. And I don't think it's the way that right-wing politicians demagogue trans children, for example. Like, I don't think that's the crisis, that we're all too soft. But I do think it is a show about the crisis of masculinity, and it shows a really amazing, positive way for men to connect with other men, to support each other, to connect with other women, to connect with people that may not speak the same language because they're from a different country or might have different customs, and how that you can build and connect a community based upon the power of positivity and belief, and that can transcend all of these artificial or sometimes logistical or even sometimes legitimate barriers that people have when they connect to each other. And Ted Lasso's character's superpower is his ability to wear down those barriers. And after wearing down those barriers, people can see each other as whole and complete selves and can make the choice to support each other rather than tear each other down. And I think that story is a response, maybe not literally, but symbolically, to the crisis of masculinity. It gives a positive role model of how men can interact in a world that teaches them to go out there and just crush soccer balls. And I think it does usher in the end of the anti-hero.
Nicely said.
Another question for you.
Yeah, please.
What do you think? So two things. Is the show saying anything from a singular connected theme throughout all three seasons? And if Ted Lasso were a real person, what do you think he would say about his life?
Well, I know Ted Lasso is a real person because I am married to him.
Come on.
Like, you are Ted. You
no.
are. So you asked, do I think there is a single continuous connected theme
throughout all three seasons?
That's a really good question, and I might need to chew on it just a little bit. I do think each season has its particular kind of trajectory that ties into a kind of a theme, and more so each character is on a really long continuous journey toward a certain destination that I think overlaps. It carries over through all three seasons. If we look at Ted as the central character, as the title character, of course, then I think it might be safe to assume that his trajectory, his character trajectory, is the most cogent and consistent theme that goes across the entire series, at least to date. We don't know what's happening. And that theme, if I can try to put a point on it, is toward, you know what, I'm going to entirely amend that entire statement, because yes, every character is on their own journey, but I think at the end of the day, every character is in search of, in some form or other, authenticity, they're in search of finding their true selves, finding a self they can believe in, whether that is discovering that you're actually a really great football coach and that you have inspired a whole league of people that surround you, but the only person you really want to inspire is your son because your dad was not able to do that for you. Or that you inherited in a divorce the only thing your ex-husband loved, which was his football club, and so you set about trying to destroy it, but through the process, you found that it's the thing you love most in the world. Or you are a burgeoning model, PR specialist, and you strike out on your own, you have trouble believing in yourself, and then finally, through trial and tribulation, through failed relationships and flourishing relationships and new friendships that you never thought were possible, you come into yourself, you take a stand, you decide to create a women's football team, and you affirm your sexuality in front of the whole world. These are all journeys toward inner authenticity, journeys of people who are in various states of their lives finding themselves through their relationships to each other. So if there is a central common theme across the three seasons, that would be my first bet on what it is.
I love that. I think that is a fantastic idea. And I think that absolutely connects it. I think the show, if I may,
I
don't disagree with you at all. I think authenticity is a major theme in helping people recognize who they authentically are. And if you look at so many of the antagonists, a lot of them are inauthentic, like Rupert, who lies and manipulates. When Nate starts to try to be this ruthless, cold-hearted football coach, which he's really not, he ends up being completely unhappy and has to come back to AFC Richmond as just an athletic trainer.
Yeah, and he has to go back and pick up the violin that he used to play and discover his own love for artistry and his own connection to his childhood and his family. Like, there's so much that is just this search for who am I really?
And I think you nailed it, that authenticity is the theme that connects all three seasons. In particular, now that we're harping on Nate, this is not the point I want to make, but I think I want
to
make
this. Yeah, we'll come back to it, yeah.
Because I think Nate is a character that tried to be Ted and failed. Mm-hmm. And I think a conventional way to write a story would have had Nate become the antagonist of season three. And it come down to Ted versus Nate. That would have been the low-hanging fruit. If I were writing this show, that's what I would have done at the end of season two. And have it come down to the vision of a positive football team versus a negative football team. Positive coaching lift people up. Nate's negativity of tearing people down and brutalizing them and being egotistical, which does exist in sports. Plenty of professional coaches coach in a variety of sports similar to the way Nate does. And you would have had it come down to one big game and Ted would have won and it would have been a resounding positivity beats negativity. But instead, they take this journey with Nate where Nate's just like, this is not who I am. This is not the man I want to be. I'm going to give up the wealth and the fame and the notoriety. And I'd rather just wait tables than become a jerk, than become a toxic man. And I love that journey for Nate. And I like that he gets the girl and that she's just like, you got to get back into football, even if it's not being a coach. And he goes back. He is literally where he was, where he started, but he is happier. He is respected. He is content. You know, and I think that's an example that highlights the authenticity. That's who Nate really, truly is. And I envision a world where Nate will get back into coaching probably because he is a soccer coach, but he's going to be more like Ted and less like Rupert when he does so.
You know, I'm just going to add a little bit to this, and that's that if you really drew a visual map of the character journeys and where they physically are, everyone pretty much physically ends up in the same place they were at the beginning of season one. Everybody leaves, goes on a big journey, and comes back home. And yet, that home is more spacious. That home has more to offer. That home is more comforting, is happier. Everyone comes back to a version of themselves that has grown quite extensively over this time. You know, Roy leaves the team and comes back as a coach and becomes the manager. Jamie leaves and comes back. Keely leaves and comes back. Ted leaves America, has his whole adventure, and goes back to the U.S. But there is such substantial growth that happens in the meantime that when they come back, it's like a totally new place.
I love it.
So we took a total detour, but you were going to expand on themes.
What I think the theme is, and I think the show telegraphs it very, very openly, Ted Lasso, professional sports coach, doesn't care about wins and losses. He cares about whether or not the players are better people on and off the field. And if there's a message that keeps coming back, it's not about winning and losing. A traditional sports narrative has the team eventually winning. That's what we want to see. We want to see the team overcome the odds, go out on the field, and actually win. And this team, as talented and as great as it was, and how Ted actually becomes a football coach in this season, where it's his idea, that total football, that ends up transitioning and changing the team. He had to learn how to actually coach the sport that he was in, rather than relying on people like Nate and Roy and Beard to come up with their ideas. And they are second place. They do not achieve their objective, which was to win the championship. But it's not about that. It never was. It's about, can he help these players be better people on and off the field? You know, and it's funny, I work in business leadership. I am in a sales-oriented organization. You know, and I told my team after the season 3 finale that I really don't care if we hit our targets or not. I care if we are growing professionally and personally. And if we're growing as human beings professionally and personally, that the targets, we'll eventually hit them. It doesn't matter to me that we don't hit the targets as long as we grow. And if we're not growing and not hitting the targets, that's the problem. And that's a lesson that I took directly from season 3 of Ted Lasso. And the thing I liked that it suggested, the success of AFC Richmond and this philosophy is spreading as another coach from a team, when Ted Lasso shakes his hand and said, good game, regurgitates the philosophy back to Ted, unprompted. It's like, yeah, it's not about the wins and losses. It's about whether these are better men on and off the field. And the idea that his legacy is now organically growing into other clubs is really great. So to me, if there's one theme that I think is there, and if there's one moral that is there that we can take away, in a capitalist competitive economy that we all live in, I'm assuming most of us listening live in a capitalist system, and that we're taught to compete and win at all costs, do everything you can, win, 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 make the money, make the win, 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 win. Ted Lasso says, slow down. It's about whether or not you're a good person and you're becoming a better person. It's not about winning or losing in a conventional way. And I think that's a lesson and a philosophy, a Ted Lassoism that we can take with us out of the show that can help all of us become better people. It's not about just beating my rival. And I'm a competitive person. I love sports. That's one of the reasons I love this show. Right now, I'm looking at my wife wearing a baseball t-shirt. I'm wearing an Eagles hat, or was. I took it off because it's warm in the room. We love sports and love professional sports and love watching our teams win. I love competing and going out and winning. These things do get me up in the morning, but at the end of the day, you can never sacrifice your internal moral compass on that route. And Ted's example of unflappable positivity, never compromising morality, ethics, humanity, in the pursuit of really competitive, stressful endeavors, is a lesson that I think is fantastic, because so many times it's the Tony Sopranos and the Walter Whites of the worlds who win. So many times it's the Ruperts that end up getting everything they want and everybody else is just left for the scraps. and Ted Lasso's story and its themes through season one and three, I think are saying, no, it's not about that at all. And that's one of the, I think, I hope will be the enduring legacy. And I truly hope there will be other shows in a Ted Lasso-ing way. You can't recreate this show. It's very unique. But I do hope that there's a template there for the modern hero that people need that's more Ted Lasso than it is Tony Soprano. Say this, loving The Sopranos.
Yeah, absolutely. The second part of your question was, if Ted Lasso was real, what do you think he would say about his life? Is that right?
Yeah. Do you think a real life Ted Lasso can be successful? Let me rephrase it. Can someone actually in life live the Ted Lasso way and creed and have the level of success that the character Ted Lasso has?
I kind of have to believe that. We live in, oh my God, I'm going to say we live in a society. I'm going to quick take a drink because I said we live in a society. Everybody, if you've got a drink, bottoms up.
As a society,
we are told that nice guys finish last. We're told that you have to be cutthroat to get ahead. And there are examples everywhere of that being borne out. But that sucks. Like, I think we can all agree at this point that the idea that if you are good and compassionate and kind-hearted and ethical, you're going to fail sucks. And more, and again, we can only really look to capitalism for examples of this, but more and more, we are seeing a demand for ethics in our markets, a demand for ethics in our careers and our jobs and our leadership. And Ted Lasso is more things than just an ethical man, but that is the baseline of beginning to refute the sucky narrative of nice guys finish last. We are all begging for more ethical, sustainable approaches to our way of life. And so I have to believe that there is the possibility of success if you are a Ted Lasso type. The problem is that success tends to be a longer term, right? Not immediate gain, not quick gain. It is long-term sustained growth for which you have to get some pretty significant buy-in. And Ted gives us a model for that buy-in on a small scale, but can that be replicated in really large scales is the question. Or in real universes that don't have the element of kind of, let's be honest, cartoonishness of the Richmond team. At times, they all very much appear like kind of stock characters and archetypes. So
you think so? I really?
At times, whenever they're individually broken out or they're in small groups, they are very realistic. This show plays with realism and sort of cartoonishness in a really interesting way that I think it's mostly successful with. But especially this last season, anytime you see all the boys in the locker room together, they are... It's not realistic in terms of the way they interact with each other. It's very kind of silly and campy. And I'm not saying that as a dig on the show, but I'm saying they fall into kind of, here is the Frenchman and this is what he says because all he does is sleep with women. And here is Zorro Van Damme. And Danny Rojas is constantly reduced to a little bit of a comic relief. But when they get into smaller situations and it's just people relating to people, that's when they feel like real, fully fleshed men. That's all I'm trying to say.
That's fair. I, you know, having been in a few locker rooms, some of the silliness and intimacy that you see there doesn't seem that unrealistic to me.
Well, I don't think it's unrealistic for men to be silly. I'm just saying that the way that they are portrayed and the way that their characters are written when they are one unit is very cartoonish. It just doesn't feel hyper-realistic.
Fair enough. I will answer the question, too, is can there be a real-life Ted Lasso and can there be a success? I think the show teaches us something about success and that it doesn't have to be defined externally. Meaning, if you are a football coach, you can say success is not the record. It's not about what the press writes about you. You can set this is what success looks like. And this is something that this is a Derrickism, that only I can define success for me. Nobody else can define it for me. And that sounds simple, but it's really hard to do in practice because we're constantly surrounded by people saying, this is what a successful person looks like. If you Google, you go onto YouTube and find a TED Talk on what's a successful person look like, you'll see thousands of TED Talks. This is what a successful person looks like. They're almost always about that one subject. You're going to have friends and family members that are going to say, this is what success looks like. This is what you should do. This is the path you should take to be successful. And I think of the character Sam and how Sam gets offered in season 2, I believe it is, to be the star player on a brand new African football team in a brand new African football league with a billionaire willing to fund his lifestyle. And you know what he says? I'd rather stay with Richmond and open up a restaurant. And that is Sam defining success for himself. You have Ted Lasso being offered to be one of the most highest paid coaches in the Premier League. And what's he say? I got to go home and be a dad. Because to me, that's what successful looks like. If there is a chance of the Ted Lasso philosophy leaving the artificial world of Apple TV and entering into our reality, I think it starts with us saying, I can define what success looks like for me. This podcast success to me, it's not about how many people download, listen to it, or share it, even though I love that anytime that happens. And for every person that downloads, I thank you. But for me, the success of this podcast was that Laurel and I have something to share and say, and we have the opportunity to share and say it. It's its own reward. Even if nobody listened to a single Midnight Myth episode, I'd still do it because it's successful in my opinion, in my view. And I think that is something that we can take from the Ted Lasso television show, put it into our lives to say, can real Ted Lassos exist? Absolutely. We just have to decide to be that. And then it exists. It's really that simple. We don't all have to be Mr. Potters from It's a Wonderful Life. We could all be Teds.
I love it. That's great.
I want to know where you rank Ted Lasso personally, Laurel, compared to favorite shows. How do you view it? How do you think this show compares? Is it one of your favorites? Is it up there? Is it middle? And tell me a little bit why.
You know, I love this show. I really do. There is very little chance of any show breaking into my top five at this point because they are things that were, for the most part, solidified when I was 15 and 16. And as you know, the shows you like, the movies you like, and the music that you like when you are 15 and 16 will be with you forever. Like, prove me wrong. Is your favorite band not the favorite band that you had when you were 15 or 16? So it's not breaking into my top five. I wouldn't necessarily even put it in my top 10. I love it. It's honestly, it's not even my favorite Apple TV Plus show. I love it, but it's not quite there for me. In terms of like favorites, and
you're looking at me.
I'm so sorry.
Like walking on eggshells.
I love it, but I don't love it more than Severance. I don't necessarily love it more than Mythic Quest. That's how I feel.
Yeah, I mean, it's your opinion, man. You know, it's like your opinion. You can have whatever. There's a reason I asked. I wanted to know. So it's a show that you love, but
I love a lot of shows.
Yeah, you put it equal to a lot of shows that you love. And even on Apple TV Plus, you have some shows that you personally like more.
Yeah.
That is totally fair. For me, Ted Lasso is my all-time favorite television show.
Which I love that for you.
Yeah. It was The Sopranos. To be fair, through season 1 through 5 of Game of Thrones, it was Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But then 6, 7, and 8 happened, which are fine. I'm not trying to say anything negative about them, but it definitely knocked the show down a few pegs for me in terms of favorite. I also have always loved HBO's Rome. That's been a like favorite sleeper show of mine. And then I, Claudius, is a favorite sleeper show of mine. That those two, I just love. Why? They're about ancient Rome, and that's my thing. I love ancient Rome. And but traditionally, I would have said The Sopranos is my all-time favorite show. Ted Lasso has knocked that down a peg. I am a Ted Lasso man. And I think for me, the reason is because I often feel that, in particular, as someone who strives to be a successful person in this economy, successful monetarily, that there is this belief that in order to get ahead, you have to be, for lack of a better term, an asshole. And I love that this show is just like, nope, that's just not how it is. And sometimes in life, in my job, I have to be an asshole to get things done, and I hate it. I absolutely hate it because the world says, we're not going to do this unless you yell. And so you're like, I need you to do it, so now I have to yell. But I never feel good about it, and I would prefer to approach my life with a more Ted Lassoian way at all times. And for that, it's my favorite show.
That's awesome.
Do you think it's going to continue?
I kind of do. I don't think we're going to get new seasons of Ted Lasso. I think there's going to be a second life for at least some of these characters. I think there kind of has to be. They've really teased a lot of that out, and there's just so much more potential for a lot of the characters, even with Ted on the other side of the Atlantic.
Like a spinoff.
Yeah, I could see a spinoff.
Rebecca and Keeley making
building the women's
a football team.
Yeah, that would be very cool. If there's a character I really just want to see more from, believe it or not, it's Jamie. Like, I really want more Jamie because...
Jamie
and his poop hair. yeah, no, they truly did a lot of work to bring that character into a totally new light in just 3 seasons, and I feel like it would be really fun to see more of him. I don't necessarily want a Jamie-centered show. I just want more of him. And Rebecca is my favorite character, so I want more Rebecca.
That was going to be my next question. Who is your favorite character not named Ted? It's Rebecca. Want to tell me why?
100% Rebecca. So she is, in many ways, I feel like I relate to her a lot, but she's also so aspirational, and not just from the hashtag girl boss angle, but the way that she is able to enter a room and command a room and snap people out of their dazes. She is such a welcoming and warm presence who is also so in charge of who she is. There was one episode this season, and I might cry if I start talking about it, but the episode that I think I love the most, and I'll get vulnerable here for a moment, it was the day I signed the contract to publish my book, which is a thing that I have dreamt of since I was in the third grade. I've always wanted to be an author, and lo and behold, in a year, I'll be able to hold my book. I was having a really hard time processing that, and I still am to a certain extent. It hasn't quite landed with me that that is really happening. And then that night was the Ted Lasso episode where Rebecca gets invited to the table with Edwin Akufu, and they're all going to talk about starting this super league. And it's also the same episode where Nate goes home and plays his violin, and everyone's kind of reconnecting to their childhood selves. But Rebecca is at a hotel, and she looks at herself in the mirror, and she sees her like 6-year-old self standing in the mirror and realizes that she has a seat at the table for the first time in a way that she has always wanted. And then she does her ritual of making herself as big as humanly possible, which just makes her look like a goddess of fear and love and beauty. And then her 6-year-old self does it in the mirror as well. And that scene just was overwhelming to me because Hannah Waddingham is just such an exquisite actor, and she is able to pull so much out of Rebecca, who is this towering, commanding presence who inspires people and who is also dealing with deep insecurities and building bridges toward the woman that she believes that she is. She's just an extraordinary character. I really want more from her. So I do hope that the characters continue, but she has always inspired me. I also just love her friendships with other women because there has always been a dearth of good, constructive female relationships on screen. And I'm always really pleased to see those, especially when they're intergenerational. I know there's not that much of an age difference between Rebecca and Keeley, but it is significant enough that like one feels like a mentor and one feels like she's being built up by the other. And that's really cool to see. So I just love her. I love her, love her, love her.
I love that. That's awesome.
What about you? Your favorite character not named Ted? Or do you just want to talk about Ted?
I mean, Ted is the name of the show. Ted is my favorite character, the character I most identify with. I would say my second favorite character is probably Roy.
Roy's wonderful, yeah.
I love the juxtaposition of the strong, silent type and then the bubbly, outgoing, happy Ted. And I love their interplay. I thought one of the best scenes in the entire series was when Roy joins the Diamond Dogs.
Yeah.
And realizing that he really messed up with Keeley and that he has this group of supportive men and he's got to go to them and be like, how do I become a better person? And then Higgins comes in with that quote that, you know, there is no such thing as perfect. You got to just keep asking for help when you can and keep striving to it. I'm paraphrasing. I don't have it in front of me. And I think Roy Kent, as the most toxic of toxically masculine characters going on this journey with all of these other ones, from the moment when Ted gives him the, oh gosh, I'm blanking on the book, A Wrinkle in Time. It's A Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah. I love that book.
I've actually never read. I know there's a movie of it too. So when he reads that book and then he decides that he's going to defend Nate from Jamie picking on him, he goes on this journey of trying to use his status and privilege and power to be better. And he becomes a better man, even though he doesn't, quote, get the girl at the end. I thought it's just a really good juxtaposition. There's absolutely a part of me that identifies with the strong, silent type, even though I'm not that person at all. And I think to me, that's sort of the mythological core of this. In America, there is a version of what it means to be a man, and it is the cowboy. It is the gunslinger. It's the stoic, tough, I shoot first, ask questions later. I don't complain when there's a job to do, I get it done. And I will defend my family with my bare hands, and then I'll feed them with my bare hands. And no force out there can stop me once I set my mind to it. And that myth of an American male is so deconstructed naturally through Ted that other people that exude, although Roy Kent's not American, but exude a sort of same tough exterior, he ends up wearing them down. Not where Roy Kent becomes a tough guy who becomes less of a tough guy. He is who he is, but he ends up learning how to become a better person. And one of the great examples of that is his friendship with Jamie and how they become best friends and how he goes out of his way to do extra training for Jamie. And even though they end up, like a lot of dumb boys do, punching each other in the face over a girl, I've been there, you know, like a lot of us have been there.
Who is she?
This was like years
I'm
ago,
kidding,
love.
I'm kidding.
I didn't have to fight any man for you. One man wanted to fight me and I shut that down.
Yeah.
Story for another podcast. All right. Those are all the things I kind of wanted to chat about with the Ted Lasso and this meditation. Do you have anything else, dear?
I do. I really wanted to just quickly talk about something that I realized in the Amsterdam episode, the other really fantastic episode from this season, which is when Ted takes some drugs or possibly takes a bad batch and winds up inventing total football again and really reconfiguring the way that he thinks about coaching football for Richmond. So I just wanted to bring in the fact that though I know nothing about total football and I know nothing about coaching or sports tactics, I'm not someone who was a heavy-duty athlete. I do have a background in performance, and total football, or at least whatever Ted devises with the ketchup bottles in the restaurant in Amsterdam, also looks like a performance technique that I used to study with called viewpoints. And if you are an actor or a dancer who studied with viewpoints, I hope that you also put this together because I thought it was just a big red flag. And I just wanted to briefly talk about viewpoints because I think there is something kind of interesting about the idea of it that also ties in with the themes of Ted Lasso. So this is just a little brief aside, and that's that viewpoints was pioneered in the 70s by a theater artist named Mary Overly, and then later on it was taken by Anne Bogart and some other theater artists and built into a bigger, complex philosophy of performance. But the basic idea of this technique, it's like a postmodern physical theater and dance technique that is all about something called horizontalism and non-hierarchical experimentation with the elements of performance. Things like space, time, text, shape, form, things like that. It's all about removing the perceived hierarchies of how we perform, how we put plays together, how we put choreographies together. And that non-hierarchical experience is exactly what Ted creates with Total Football in his new approach to coaching Richmond. He takes away the perceived hierarchies that are supposed to be out there on the field. You put your superstar here and you surround them by these supporters and they stay in these kind of formations more or less throughout the process. Instead, he institutes total football by which they continue to look for gaps in the field, fill it in, and every man is a superstar, every man is a support player. I just wanted to talk about that quickly because I think that also ties into the themes of the show, right? There is no player on the Richmond field who is a bigger superstar at this point. Jamie may be putting in most of the goals, but he's doing so as part of this rigorous machine in which everyone is just as important as everyone else. It's the same with all of the characters. The show's called Ted Lasso, but it's not just about him. It's about Roy. It's about Jamie. It's about Keeley, Rebecca, Nate, Beard. Every single character is a star, and every single character is in support of everyone else.
Which is why I think the show's going to continue, but it's going to change the title.
Yeah.
Because the last thing that, one of the last things Ted does is he reads the book written by the reporter, I'm blanking
Trent
on his name.
Trent Crim,
from The Independent. And he reads the book and his one note was, it's a great book, but changed the title. It was never about me. Presumably he was titling that book Ted Lasso.
He called it The Lasso Way.
Yeah. And said, change the title. It's not about me. And I think we will see more stories from this group of artists, but I don't think it's going to be Ted Lasso anymore. So I think Ted Lasso's role in shaping and changing these characters' lives is over.
Yeah.
It's time for him to go be a dad. Maybe he'll pop up. What an amazing thing Jason Sudeikis and his team and the directors and the writers and the producers have able to do to make a show about just honest positivity, about people trying to become genuinely better, being so, so funny, but also allowing it to be messy and real. I love this show so much, and it's my favorite show.
And all based on a dumb Super Bowl commercial.
A very dumb Super Bowl commercial.
Incredible.
Anything else to say?
No, this has been great. It was a lot of fun.
Until next time, I'll see you on the pitch, and be kind.
Richmond till we die.